guy. Kid President's a poet and he didn't know it, right? I mean, who would have known that he was writing poetry? But that really ties into what we're talking about with building people, which my name's Kurt, by the way. If we haven't met, it's great to have you here today. And they probably want to know about the Beans and Rice Fast. Anybody want to know about the Beans and Rice Fast? The results? Well, let me give you a little bit of perspective on what we were doing here. We invested some money to get the Beans and Rice Fast of 2 weeks ago going. We invested actually $460. You can see the beans, rice, labels, the baggies. There was staff time. There were some other pieces that kind of built into that we didn't include in the startup. And, one of the things we did, if you're newer here this morning, weren't a part of the Beans and Rice Fast, is this tribe went on a one-week fast leading into Easter, and basically we were taking on the mode of sustenance, living on the cheapest food possible, beans and rice, in order to save whatever we would normally spend on our grocery bill, out to eat at a restaurant, and at the end of the week donated that in order to help wipe out poverty in the world. So we're investing that money into places. In fact, a couple of the groups, we wanted to be a part of some amazing opportunities. One is called Serve Life, and this is a group that's wiping out international poverty, working in India and Nepal. They have orphanages for kids who have no parents. And then another group we're partnering with is an amazing group called Shepherd Community Center. And they have an academy where we are building into their preschool initiative, creating some scholarships for preschoolers, because one of the things we've discovered is one of the levers, the main levers, that either keeps people in poverty or begins to get children specifically out of poverty is something called preschool education. In fact, it's an amazing thing that a kid that gets a preschool education that's in poverty, that gives him a great propensity to actually climb out of poverty. So his family, when he is an adult or she is an adult, does not know the poverty that he or she grew up in when they were a child. And in fact, at Shepherd Community Center, they've discovered through a study that was done by DePaul University that for every $75,000 in scholarships given to Shepherd, it saves the city of Indianapolis long-term over $1 million through the life of that kid. And so those are the initiatives. And so what we had to do is we had to kind of think through, okay, what kind of money do we think is going to come in through this? And we had no idea. I mean, we gave you guys some projections, ideas, opportunities that we could invest in, depending on how much came in. And we had to kind of do some internal planning. We had to meet with, the groups that we're supporting, Serve Life and Shepherd, and say, hey, if we got this, what could we do? Or if we had this much come in, then what could we do with that? And so the idea is that we would take, the investment that we started with, the seed investment or the startup investment, and that we would actually begin to invest that. We were hoping maybe like 15 times the amount that we started with would come in, which would be, $5,000-$6,000. And this was just a way that we would be able to, kind of build into these initiatives, help them begin to wipe out poverty. And, this is going to take a long time. Let me try something else. And so, we thought $5,000, with $5,000, we got way more than $5,000, all right? So we thought, man, if we got $10,000, what could we do with $10,000? And how could we change, what these organizations are able to do? And so we got $10,000, and actually we got way more than $10,000. We got $12,000. Actually, what we ended up getting in the end was $12,740. How crazy is that? Look at that. That's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, and here's the thing. Based on your faithfulness, it began to run over. Based on your faithfulness, the way that we're able to build into these organizations, and our assumption is about half of the Cross Point tribe did this. All right, it's about half of us went on this journey. And your generosity was able, with Serve Life, we found out that for $1,000 a month, we can support this orphanage in India. And so we're going to be able to support them for 4 months. $4,000 is going to Serve Life. Now, the return on investment there is actually $40,000. 10 times the amount it costs to run an orphanage in India is what it costs here. So that investment exponentially, grows just by it going to India. And then here's the cool thing. And locally, through Shepherd Community Center, we have this investment of $8,740. It's going into Shepherd Community Center, providing scholarships for kids at a preschool level. And the long-term return on investment there is $116,000 that $8,700 will turn into over the life of these kids. That is absolutely amazing. I mean, it's awesome, awesome. And these numbers have nothing to do, those are just numbers, right? This has nothing to do with the measure of how these lives are going to be changed forever. I mean, how these lives of kids, of families are going to be invested in are going to go up and to the right. I mean, you can't put a price tag on that. And by the way, something really cool was our offering last weekend was normal, typical offering. I mean, what normally comes into the joy box is, you know, that came in normally. So what came in here was incremental, above and beyond, by simply 1 week eating on the cheap so that we could save and help others have a shot at abundance. So this is what it looks like to build into people. This is what return on investment looks like. You know, this idea of an overfilled, bucket of beans. I mean, this is a way that we're changing the face of poverty in the world. And this song, you know, that we're nothing more than the way we treat each other. Those are all pictures of what it means to build into people. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. In fact, today we're going to be talking about how, you know, God builds into us so we can build into others, so we can reproduce things in our lives. And I really want to kind of lay out some ideas that help us get a gauge on where we are in our development, in our growth, in our personal development, in our spiritual development. And so before we do that, let's just take a moment and pray and invite God into these moments. God, thank you that we can gather in a dark room like this today. And I'm just asking that as we spend the next several minutes, as we just have already spent some moments together, God, that you would help them to be fruitful for us. And God, I pray that you would help us to get a better picture of your ambition for our lives. I just pray that you help my words to be articulate, and to be a reflection of your heart and of your character. And God, I just pray that as a result of our time here today, you would help each and every one of us to see how we can actually go to new places. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, in the Gospel according to John, which is one of the first four books of the New Testament, it's one of the authorized biographies of Jesus' life, Jesus says this. He says, truly, this is amazing, it's fascinating that he says, truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do. Get this, and greater works than these will he do because I am going to the Father. Now, I realize that all of us in here today, we may not have the same ideas around Jesus. You might be on a journey to trying to understand who Jesus is. That's really cool. We're glad you're here. This is a place where you can kind of begin to piece some of those things together. And what the Bible says is that Jesus is God in the flesh. That Jesus came from earth, he came down or from heaven, down to earth, took on the form of flesh, took on the form of love, and he died on the cross so that you and I wouldn't have to. And as he was doing this, he built into people. And yet God, Jesus says of himself, you are going to do even yet greater things than I. And we're kind of like, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, what did Jesus mean by we're going to do greater things? I mean, didn't Jesus like heal people? I mean, wasn't he like healing people all the time? How am I going to do greater things than that? Yes, you are going to do greater things than that. But like, didn't Jesus like raise people from the dead? I mean, how could I do greater things than those? Jesus said, hey, you're going to do greater things than that. Didn't Jesus like turn water into wine at like a wedding one time? I mean, yes, and if you figure out how to do that, you will be invited to every wedding this summer, all right? I mean, he says, yes, you are going to do greater things. I mean, it's crazy that he actually says this. You're going to do greater things than the things he has done. Speaking of greater things, anybody watch the Pacers yesterday? Yeah, how about the Pacers bringing it home, trying to get game 5 and 6 nailed down here so we can move on to the next round. I had the chance to be down at a Pacer game last week, and it's always fascinating to me. I sit up and I'm kind of up a little higher, and I see Larry Bird sitting down there, you know, right next to the entrance of the locker room restaurant. I've had the chance to be down at floor level a couple times where I actually walked by him, got his autograph once. And I don't know if you've ever done this when you're in the presence of greatness. If you like change your walk, you know, I'm just thinking, man, he might look at me and think, Kurt, man, you have got game. I can tell by the way you walk, your swag. Would you come to our practice gym and just, you know, work out with me a little? These are the dreams I used to have as kids. I have them like once a month now, but, you know, as a kid, like the car comes by your house and you're waiting for him to come by because that could be like, you know, a scout. You never know. But I mean, you know, I have these dreams of like if Larry said to me, you know, Kurt, man, if you came and spent a few hours a week with me, man, I could really develop your game. And listen, if he said, hey, how about we work together at like 6 in the morning, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the next few weeks, and he could do 3 in the morning, and you know where I'd be? I'd be shooting with Larry Bird, right? I would, wherever he was, if he gave me that invitation, I would be there. And we all know that, I mean, he would say that to me if he saw me play, right? I mean, we all know that. Well, you know, here's the thing. I can get super excited about, you know, being invested in by a man. How exciting is it to know that God has a vision for our life? I mean, that the God of the universe actually looks at us and says, hey, I want to invest in you. I want to help you go up and to the right. There are greater things in store for you. And his whole goal in that is that we would continue to be conformed into the likeness of Jesus. And as a result of that, we would be built up, others would be built up. And literally, I mean, we'd begin this trajectory of changing the world. So today, I want to think a little bit about it. I want to help us think about what it would look like. How can we be best positioned to have significant impact on the world around us? All right, what kind of people are positioned to have significant influence in the relationships in their lives? What are the things that, you know, I can do? And I've got a grid that I want to show you this morning. It's been really helpful to me. And, you know, I found that this grid right here is supported by history. I found it's supported by my experience. You're probably going to find it's supported by your experience. And as we're going to find, the Bible even supports this idea. And what this shows is every single one of us right now have a measure of character. That's on the y-axis, right? The y-axis, I think. Yeah, on the y-axis, you know, we have a measure of character, every single one of us. And our character is how our inner life measures up with, you know, truth. How our life, you know, measures up with what we say we want to be about, the values we want to be about. It's an element of integrity. And here's the thing we know about character. Every single one of us in this room have gaps when it comes to our character. We have gaps. We have places where there's outages, there's shortages. And then the other thing is we all have a level of competence. And these are, you know, some of us are highly competent in certain things. Others of us don't have much competence in certain things. You know, and this could be, you know, you have a competence in relationships that you have. It might be that you're really competent as a mom or as a dad, or maybe you're not very competent in the new job that you began, you know, recently began. But regardless, you know, we all have certain things that we have certain competences at. And here's the thing, you know, history, your experience, my experience, the Bible, as we're going to find, you know, would say that a person who refuses to grow in character and competence, somebody who refuses to grow in these things, the only good thing about that scenario is that you can do limited harm, all right? You can't do a ton of harm because you're not growing. All right, you're not growing in your character, you're not growing in your competence, so, you know, you're not going to be doing too much harm because you're limiting yourself by not expanding beyond where you are right now. And I would say that most of us recognize that. We know that there's a certain element of character I need to grow, a certain level of competency I need to grow. In fact, that's why some of us are here today. You're trying to say, okay, what does God have to do with this? You know, who is God? We're asking some of those questions. And, you know, or you might be following God and you're trying to continue to understand, okay, what are my next steps so I can continue to grow in character and competence? And for you, you know, this is something I'd really encourage you to say, okay, where am I at on this grid? What quadrant do I fall into? And so I'm just telling you, if you're not continuing to let other people grow you in terms of your competence, you can do good, all right? And maybe you have good character, but you're not growing your competence, but you're going to have a limited amount of good. All right, because if you're not growing in your competence, it limits your ability to have maximum impact. All right, so you're going to have a limited amount of good. And you won't be able to do as much good as you would like to do. Always going to feel like you're coming up a little bit short. And that's just the result of us not growing our competence. Sad thing is, there's individuals in the world who can do unlimited harm. All right, unlimited harm. These are people who are very competent. All right, very competent. These are people like Adolf Hitler. All right, I mean, think of Adolf Hitler, very, very competent, had little to no character whatsoever. He had the ability to rouse a whole entire people group around, you know, basically demolishing a whole nother people group and did unlimited harm. I mean, it was unlimited what he had the ability to do because he had a level of competence without any character. And I think history and my experience, your experience, the Bible, I mean, all these things show us that if we want to be in a position where we can have, you know, maximum impact in the world, then we recognize we need to grow in our character and we need to grow in our competence. And when we begin to orient our life in that way, we actually have the ability to do unlimited good. Right, unlimited good. I mean, the options, the ways we can maximize our potential. And listen, there are kinds of people who allow themselves to be built into. Some of you are that kind of person, and you're experiencing this in your life right now, right? Because people who are doing unlimited good are people who allow people to build into them in their competence, build into them in their character. Now, an interesting question. This might be a little heretical for some of you, but what if Jesus had to grow in his character and competence? I mean, what if Jesus wasn't perfect? I mean, sometimes we have this idea of Jesus coming out of the womb and he like knew three languages the moment he hit the cradle or the stable. He was perfect and made perfect decisions. And I'm not saying that Jesus sinned. I mean, I believe he was sinless, which means that he didn't dishonor things that God called him to be about. He did nothing that was contrary to the heart of God. But I mean, sometimes we think, man, Jesus knew it all when he was born. But I would beg to differ. Take a look at what the Gospel according to Luke says. Different writer, another authorized biographer of Jesus' life. Luke 2, the writer says, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. So what we read right here is even Jesus had to put himself in a position where he was built into by other people. He put himself in a position where he could develop and grow. And I believe he was taught by his mom. I believe that she built into him. I believe his dad built into him. I believe that as we see him talking to the religious leaders and going into the temple, not only was he there instructing and, at a very young age, but we also get the picture that he was learning. He was being built into at the age of 12 by other religious leaders. See, Jesus had to grow. A couple weeks ago, I was standing out at Connection Point. I had one of these freaky moments where I'm standing there, just watching people come out of the service, come down the hall, and there's this guy standing next to the restroom, and I kept looking at him, thinking, man, I feel like I know that guy. And he kind of kept looking at me, and so, he was waiting for someone to come out of the restroom. As soon as they came out, they like beelined toward me, and we began talking, and we talked for like 2 or 3 minutes. They were telling me about their experience here at Cross Point. It was their first time with us. He's talking really fast, and the whole time I'm just thinking, man, who is this? I know this person. And mid-sentence, about 2.5 minutes in, I look at him and I'm like, Frank Ponce? He's like, Kurt Walters, oh my word, Kurt Walters, I can't believe it's Kurt Walters. And Frank was a guy I used to work with. 12 years ago, we worked on the same staff together and in the same church, and we didn't even recognize each other. In fact, he sat out here and listened to me teach the entire morning, didn't even know that I was the guy he used to work with. And I'm seeing him out there, and they came in a little late. I think he may have missed an introduction, or maybe I didn't make one that day. But as we're standing out there, we're trying to figure out how did we even spend 3 minutes talking and not realize this? And there are a couple things I realized. One was he had lost about 30 pounds since I saw him last, and I'd gained about 30 pounds since I saw him last, right? And I noticed that he had a little less hair than he used to have, and mine wasn't in the preacher part anymore. It was like all messy, and so that was difference. And then the major difference, I actually told him, I said, my wife would tell you this if she were standing here. The main reason you didn't realize it was me, and she's totally right on this, all right? This isn't me dogging her, and this isn't her dogging me. It would have been her saying, it's because we weren't all cringing when Kurt got on the platform and began to speak, because I used to be really, really bad, right? I mean, I used to stay awake at night, the night before I had to get up and like read a scripture. I didn't even have to say anything. I just had to read. I'd be awake half the night because I just hated talking in front of people. And so understand that, what I'm doing right now today, I mean, the communicating, man, I have a long ways to go in growing in this. But understand, it hasn't always been this way, all right? Because I'm a person that wants to get better. And one of the ways that we do that around here at Cross Point is we give feedback, all right? And we're not looking for feedback from everybody, but the team that plans, the team that's executing the service, hint, hint, all right? The team that's planning and executing, every time we have a service, we huddle afterwards and we talk through the entire service, say, okay, what worked, what didn't, Kurt, where'd you blow it? Where'd you make up a word? How could you, you said this word wrong. I get like 6 or 8 connects every service of things I did wrong. And it's amazing because every now and then we'll have some, people that I want to bring in from the outside to come teach at Cross Point, and one of my friends who was here a while back said to me, Kurt, man, that totally blew me away when we got done with the service, and they're coming to tell me all the things I needed to kind of amp up. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry I didn't tell you about that. And they're like, well, to be honest, I've never seen that in a church before. I said, usually, man, when the pastor gets up, nobody tells him what he did well, or they always tell him what he did wrong, but, you know, nobody's like trying, no pastors are trying to grow, and that's just become kind of a part of our experience as we huddle. I mean, if you're leading worship, whether it's PJ or somebody else, we're given critical feedback. If we've got three services as we did last weekend, we're tweaking every single one. I got as many prompts, you know, that I could adjust after the second service going into the third as I did, you know, the first time we did it, because we're always trying to grow. You know, when I run into people that knew me way back, you know, one of the things I regularly hear is, wow, man, you've really grown as a communicator. Actually, the inflection's a little different. I'm not sure how to tell you. It's like, you are so much better than you used to be. And I'm not sure how to take that, but the end result is I've grown in that. And I've also grown in how to receive the compliment. Used to be I got all like hyper-spiritual on it, and I'd be saying things like, well, I mean, that's just God working through me, or, you know, that's just the Lord doing his work, woo-hoo, you know. I mean, I'd be saying stuff like that, which is all true, all right? That's all true. There's nothing not true about that, but I've just gotten to the point where I'm comfortable just saying thank you. Because one of the things I've realized is I'm not just thanking them for that comment, but I'm thanking the many people around here, PJ and Guy in the back and John and Eric, who's typically up here, you know, some of my other coaches, Kermit Wilson and Matt Hall. I'm thinking all the people who over the years have built into me and helped me become a better version of myself. And so when they do that, they, not only have they helped me grow in my communication, but they've actually helped me grow in my walk with Jesus. And because other people have invested in me, and that's the ambition that God has for me. That's the ambition God has for you. And so what does that look like? How do I grow? How do I become a better version of myself? Well, three or four ways I want to tell you about that we see this work around here at Crosspoint. It happens beyond Crosspoint, but these are phases. These are ways that people are built into around here. And, you know, if God's goal, is his ambition for us is to look like Jesus, you know, Jesus, when we get a picture of who Jesus is, that can be reasonably clear. We have a lot of descriptions. But this whole idea of how do I grow spiritually, it's kind of, you know, a nebulous term. I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm praying more than I did last year? Does that mean I'm reading the Bible more every day than I did last year? I mean, those are some of the gauges, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're growing spiritually. And so what I see in people who are on a journey toward growth, people who are being built up, you know, is that there's four things, there's four different phases that are happening at different points in their life. The first is this, is that God builds us when we seek. God builds us when we seek. My favorite picture of this is my buddy that lives behind me by the name of Adejua. And Adejua's been here since we started. He's been up here. He's shared his story before. But when I met Adejua, who's one of my backdoor neighbors behind our house, you know, he was in a seeking mode. And he still is, if I'm really honest. We'd hang out in the backyard talking with my brother and his wife and, you know, some of our other neighbors about God. And he'd ask questions and eventually got involved in a, you know, Life Together group. And we started making it there. But they were like real honest questions. I mean, he'd say things like, Kurt, you know, I know you guys think the Bible is true, but help me understand the validity for that. He'd say things like, you know, man, I'm watching you guys. And this, it's like you have a relationship with something. And it's not just some aura or spirit, but I've never experienced that. Can you help me understand what that looks like? And I tell you what, it was just so refreshing to have someone who was honestly seeking. And if you're in a seeking place, those questions probably resonate with you a little bit. I mean, those are questions you're asking. I mean, questions like, who's God? What's he like? You know, can I really bend my life toward him? I mean, if I bend my life toward him, can I depend on him? Is he really going to be who he says he is? Who's Jesus? I mean, you know, what's Jesus' main thing about? I mean, what did he come to do? These are some of the questions that I have found time and time again, you know, that God uses to build into people, and it's when they're seeking. In fact, what you kind of need is a cultural immersion, if you will. How many out of curiosity, you know, learned a second language of some way, shape, or form in your life? You know, Spanish, Greek, you know, Hebrew, That would have been if you're a theologian. You know, like French. I mean, you want to, you know, be kind of suave with your language, whatever. You know, when I was in college, I went to Costa Rica for 2 weeks. Spent 2 weeks in Costa Rica on a work camp, and we lived up in San Jose, up in the mountains, in a home of a Costa Rican family. Spoke nothing but Spanish. I mean, the only way to get by was to, you know, begin to connect with the language. And it was amazing because I learned more Spanish in 2 weeks in Costa Rica than I did in 2 years at the collegiate level in Spanish class. It's amazing what an immersion can do for us when we immerse ourselves in a culture. And this is true in the spiritual realm as well. And so, you know, if you have questions and you really want to grow, the best way to do that is to immerse yourself around people who have the answers or who are at the same time journeying toward the answers. They're at least kind of asking the same questions. And that's what Crosspoint is for a lot of us. You know, there's a cultural immersion that happens here where you rub shoulders with people who are asking some of the same questions, dealing with some of the same issues, having some of the same experiences. That's what happens, you know, when you're serving out here, when you're sitting in this room, when you get together in life together groups in the community. It's one of the awesome things that happens in this place. You rub shoulders with people and it kind of creates this cultural immersion. And you begin to grow and you begin to change. So I was kind of thinking about this whole idea of cultural immersion. I was thinking, you know, I remember getting to Costa Rica. And you know, when you go into like a new culture, what's the one thing that you really need to know where it is? The bathroom. Exactly, the bathroom. And it doesn't matter. You got to learn that right away. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, well, that's true here too. Some of you, you may only have a one bathroom experience here at Crosspoint. I mean, you've only come into this room, you know, and you know the one bathroom outside the doors here because that's the extent of your experience here. But when you begin serving and you begin rubbing shoulders in other ways, you begin to realize there's other bathrooms in the building. And your experience grows because that's an important thing, right? Why am I connecting it to a bathroom? Because I'm a guy, all right? That's the way my mind thinks. You know, you didn't realize there's bathrooms all over this community that are Crosspoint bathrooms. They happen in homes, in life together groups, when people gather in living rooms and, you know, talk about how they're growing, what God's doing, what the questions they have. And that's a bathroom in a home that is a whole different experience. And so, you know, for some of us, our growth step as we're seeking is to, you know, make multiple bathroom connects, begin to explore new bathrooms, right? You know, and in reality, you know, one of the things we do know, one of the things we understand is that when you're asking questions, when you're in that seek mode, that, you know, this is a place that's for you. I mean, that's what Crosspoint was built on. It was a place for you to come and ask questions and wrestle through these things. And we do things that we try to be pretty intentional about around here. In fact, one of the questions we get is, man, why is it so dark in here? Why is it so stinking dark in here all the time? That's one of the things people ask us. And, you know, it's a great question. One of the reasons we do that is because if you're in seek mode and you're kind of wrestling with what truth is, and I'm saying things like, you know, Jesus is, you know, God and he came down in the form of flesh and love, you might be saying, you know, Kurt, I'm not sure I totally understand that or agree with that. And you probably feel safer wrestling through some of that sitting in a dark room as opposed to the spotlight being on you the whole time. You know, another question we sometimes get is, you know, why is the music so loud? I mean, my ears are bleeding when I leave here. I'm like, good. No, not really good. I mean, we don't want your ears bleeding. I mean, that's not good. But, you know, one of the reasons, I mean, honestly, it's kind of the same idea that, you know, when you come in here, if people heard you sing, they'd leave and we want them to stay. You know, we kind of like them coming, and so we get the music loud enough. Actually, you know, as you're learning songs or singing them, we want it to be loud enough that you don't feel like you're in the spotlight. You know, we don't make assumptions around here. We don't, you know, a lot of times when I introduce a scripture, as I did today, I'll say, you know, this comes from the gospel according to Luke, for instance. You know, it's an authorized biography of Jesus' life. I don't assume you just know Luke and who he is. This is actually one of the writers saw Jesus and did an authorized biography of what was going on in his life. I try to not use all the Christianese terms, you know, that the Bible-ese terms so that only the biblically literate can understand what we're talking about. And yet at the same time, there's some assumptions we do make. In fact, there's one big assumption I make every week when I get up here to teach, and it's probably one you should know about. And you may agree with this, you may not agree with this, but this is an assumption that we find in another one of the authorized biographies of Jesus' life, the book of John. And in John 6:4, it says this. Jesus says, "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him." And so one of the big assumptions that I make every week that we're in this room is that if you're here, and you're asking honest questions, that I believe God is drawing you to him like a magnet. I mean, that's the assumption I just make. I believe that if you're here and you're asking, you know, that it's like a giant magnet drawing you to him. And that happens as we ask, as we seek, as we're open to answers that might be different than the ones that we came with and thought that we knew. And, you know, we love when that happens. That happens when we seek. Another way God builds into us is when we receive. When we receive. You know, a lot of times people ask me, like, hey, how long you been following God? How long you been a Christian? And I'm never sure if I should tell them 28 years or 17 years. Because, see, I when I was 13, I you know, 28 years ago, I accepted Christ, and then I did it again about 50 or 60 times later. It stuck somewhere in there, you know, because every time I did something wrong, I'm like, oh, I got to invite Jesus into my heart again. And so I'm not sure if I tell him then or, you know, about 17 years ago, I hit the wall really hard, and I was dealing with some really big problems in my life, and I had to receive help from other people. I had to receive forgiveness from other people. I had to receive forgiveness from God in a way that I'd never done before. And I received guidance and counsel. And it was during that time that this verse really came alive for me. That comes from John, again from the book of John, Gospel according to John, chapter 1. He says, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. And so see, when I hit the wall really hard about 13 years into my, 11 years into my Christian experience, I came to realize that the dividing line between a relationship with God isn't, and those who aren't in relationship with him, isn't what you do for God. The dividing line is your willingness to receive what God has for you through Christ. I had to learn that. 11 years in, I had to learn that. And so in a lot of ways, I feel like I've only been following God for 17 years because that's when I really understood what it means to be receiving, that my identity isn't in all the stupid stuff that caused a lot of brokenness in my life, but it's actually my identity is being a beloved son that's been adopted into God's family. That changed my life. I had to learn that. So we grow. God builds us when we receive. Another way God builds us is when we follow. See, when you seek, you're asking questions. You're saying, God, you know, wait, man, who are you? What are you like? You can I really bend my life to you? Great, great questions. Those are going to cause you to receive, you know, to be able to grow and be built into. When you're receiving, the general posture of the question is, you know, God, what can you do for me? I mean, I realize you did something for me that I have to receive. And when you begin to follow, when you're in the following mode, you begin to be in this posture of, Jesus, you can have my whole life. All right, I agree with who you are, I believe. It doesn't mean the questions aren't still there. There's still going to be questions that come. But we begin to say, God, you know, I'm beginning to give my whole life to you. Whatever you want me to do, what your word says, I'm going to do that. And sometimes what happens is we start to think with all the pop spiritualists and the, you know, pop psychology, and we think that, you know, when we receive Christ, this magical things happen in the spiritual realm, and we just grow instantly. You know, we just instantly become a better person. We instantly become more wise. We instantly get better with forgiveness. You know, and it's actually the exact opposite that we see in the Bible. In fact, there's a letter in the Bible. It's actually a training letter to a bunch of new Christians and new churches in 1 Timothy. And he talks about the training that has to take place. Look at what he says here. He says, have nothing to do with godless myths and old wise tales. Basically he's saying, hey, don't buy into the magical spirituality. No, he says, instead, rather train yourself to be godly, for physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both present life and the life to come. And so the promise here isn't that there's some magical thing that's going to happen, but that there's a power that's going to come and draw you like a magnet as you seek to grow in God. That God's going to be growing you because he draws you toward him. That God's going to be drawing you, that your life's going to be more and more involved with people who are going after his, you know, the things that God's heart goes after. And through that, as you're rubbing shoulders, as you're becoming culturally immersed, you're going to grow. You know, for some of us here in a few weeks, you're going to have the opportunity to take, you know, a very big spiritual next step. And we're gonna have a baptism service on May 18th. And this is one of those things that, you know, if you've recently received from God, received grace, began a relationship with Jesus, maybe you began a relationship with Jesus a long time ago and you've never been water baptized, Jesus says, you know, after you receive from me, the next step is to be baptized. It's actually the very next step. It's like you do this, and then here's the next thing you do, and it's a part of following. It's a part of saying, hey, God, you want me to do that? Okay, I'm going to be obedient to following your example of baptism because I want you to be alive in my life. When I follow you, things take place in my life. And so, you know, maybe this is your spiritual next step. Maybe you've received Christ and you've never been baptized. And it's interesting because, you know, man, we're like, God, man, I'm all into you. Thank you so much for what you've done on the cross for me. We get in the posture of receiving, and we receive his grace. And then God says, well, once you follow me, that's a very spiritual, internal thing. I want you to express that in an outward way through water baptism. And we say, oh, man, God, thanks for all the early stuff. I think I'll pass on that if you don't mind. So it's like the first thing God asks us to do, we're like, I think I'll pass. Do I have a hall pass on that? Do I get a, you know, get by homework thing right here? And it's not like there's anything magical about baptism other than it's being obedient to the very next step that God calls us to. And there's something about being obedient that actually opens up God's fullness in our lives. So maybe that's your next step this morning, saying, hey, I want to be baptized. We're going to have some orientation meetings here in a couple weekends on May 11th between services. You can find out more. And so as we follow God, God actually grows us. Take a look at the gospel according to Luke chapter 6. Jesus said this. He said, a disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. And so see, as you grow in your character, as you grow in your competence, you have the ability to actually do unlimited good. And to be a follower, that word disciple, we get all like, whoo, what does that mean? I mean, that's a big, big, you know, spiritual word. No, a disciple just simply means that you're a learner. It simply means you're in a posture where you're wanting to grow, where you're letting the character and the competency of Jesus actually go up and to the right in your life by allowing other people to build into you and train you. Last thing that happens, last phase we see happen a lot around here is that God builds us to produce. He builds us to produce. See, God's ambition is that you would be built up. Not just that you would stay where you are, but you become a better version of yourself. And as a seeker, as a receiver, as a follower. But then he says, I want you to take that and I want you to build into others. That's why these beans are all over the place up here. Because there's about half of this community who said, hey, I'm a reproducer. I want to take what God has blessed me with and I want to build into other people. And you know what Jesus said? Remember what he said at the very first thing we looked at? He said, greater things than these, what he was doing, you will do. I mean, it's crazy. Greater things than what Jesus did, you will actually produce. Let me tell you some of the things Jesus didn't do. You know what Jesus didn't do? Jesus did not go out and form partnerships with groups like Shepherd Community Center and come alongside and do these crazy things like going without food for a week so we could take that money and build into people who are in generational poverty and so we could actually see their lives transformed as they get up and out of poverty. Jesus never did that. You know, you're doing greater things than what Jesus actually did. You know, let me tell you something else. Jesus never, you know, had a whole bunch of people going out to Little League fields like happened yesterday. And I saw many of you connecting with people. I heard about spiritual conversations. He never had people going out to places like that, building into people's lives in our community, saying, hey, here's what I'm about. Here's what I'm a part of. You know, and actually pointing people to Jesus. Jesus never did that. Jesus never had a whole bunch of people reproducing community in homes. That actually happened after his life. In places like Noblesville and McCordsville and, you know, right here in Fishers and the greater Indianapolis area, in small groups, creating small group pockets in the neighborhoods. Jesus says, greater are things that you're going to do than the things that he did. So these are all of the ways that God says, I want you to reproduce and provide for others. This is kind of the ultimate phase, the final phase of just this ongoing way that I'm building into other people. These are the phases God uses to build people up. Now, whenever I talk about, you know, a general framework, here's the caution. Here's what I always get real skittish about. All right, because, you know, when I talk about, hey, where are you at on the spiritual journey? Which phase are you in? A couple cautions to be aware of. It'd be real easy for you to kind of use this as a yardstick to beat yourself with, all right? To kind of be like, oh, man, Kurt, you suck at this. You're terrible. Man, you're not growing at all. I mean, to just beat yourself up, or to use this kind of framework to kind of use it as a measuring stick to say, oh, man, I'm doing really good up here. Man, I built into the beans and rice deal. I mean, I've got it all going on. I don't need to change anything. And so let me tell you what, if you respond in either of those two ways, either beating yourself up, or you respond by just kind of saying, oh, man, look how good I am. Man, I'm good. I don't need to grow. There's nothing I need to change in my life. Then let me just say, maybe one of the ways God wants to build into you is through self-awareness. Maybe he wants to bring a dose of reality to your life. All right, because see, the truth is, God's less interested in where you are today, and he's more interested in the posture that you're in, the direction you're facing, and whether or not that's a direction of growth. He wants to know whether you're in a place where you're actually going to be growing up and to the right in character and competency. Whether you be in the seeker mode or the receiver phase or the follower phase or the producer, God wants you to grow beyond where you are. And so over these next 3 weeks, I kind of laid a framework out today. For the next 3 weeks, we're going to look at very specific environments in our lives where God wants to grow us by using people to build into us so that we actually become producers. And I guarantee it's going to be challenging. We're going to look at the business realm. We're going to look at, you know, at the parenting realm, what happens in our families, a couple other places. You're going to hear from some experts in these areas. And I guarantee you that you're going to be encouraged over the next 3 weeks. I guarantee you're going to hear things you don't like. There's going to be things you hear and you're like, man, I don't like that. Because, you know, those are the things that God uses to actually grow us. And so the challenge is to lean into the process. Lean into the process. Now, I don't know where this lands for you today. But I want you to take out your connection card. And on the back side are some next steps. And these are the first steps in the process. We're always about next steps, you know. One of the cool things that happens is God speaks to all of us differently. And so the one thing, though, that I know that is true for all of us here today is that this next moment when we take a pen and decide our next step is going to be a defining moment. It's going to be a defining moment on whether or not we're going to say, hey, I'm going to really lean into what God wants to do in terms of making me a better version of myself over the next few weeks. You know, it's going to be a defining moment in saying, I'm going to let my life take on this trajectory toward unlimited good. Right? And so this is a very spiritual moment. It may not seem like like, oh, man, we're just wrapping up, Kurt. No, this moment is going to be where you're going to say, okay, God, maybe it's returning. Maybe it's me taking a posture on. Maybe it's leaning in, but you're going to decide, okay, I'm going to lean in for the next few weeks and just see if God begins to create a better version of myself. So take a moment as the band gets ready to play and to mark your next step. And I just encourage you over these next few minutes as we wrap this service up for you to let God just kind of awaken you. Just kind of just say, hey, here's the place. Here's the place that I want to take you. I want to build into you and take you up into the right. So let's mark our next steps and then we'll see.